I can only remember going to the nurse's office once when I was in elementary school. I had to have been 8 years old when I slipped on some pea gravel on the sidewalk. My hands must have been in my pockets or something, because my forehead hit the sidewalk pretty hard, embedding a piece of that pea gravel deep in my forehead. The nurse gave me a Band-Aid and a Sprite and told me to wait for my mom. There must have been tears and blood, but I don't remember any of that as I sipped that full sugar soda and waited in the quiet office. I can still feel and hear the doctor's tweezers scratching at that pebble. Welcome to the SMY Podcast. I'm Communication Coordinator Daniel Bader. While I can't speak to the appropriateness of the treatment I got in that little office all those years ago, I can tell you that we're going to hear from our district nurse, Sarah Barrett, who's been in the district since October 2023, and all of the worries and responsibilities that modern school nursing programs face. Also, since it's peak season for respiratory viruses, we're going to review when to keep your child home from school and when to send them in. Grab your ice pack and a Sprite if you've got one, because we're going to the nurse's office. Sarah Barrett, welcome to the SMY Podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about yourself. How long have you been with the district?
I have been with the district since last October.
And what brought you to South Milwaukee?
I have been at South Milwaukee because I'm kind of a local person from here. I grew up in Oak Creek. So I knew the community. My grandparents grew up, we're in Cudahy. So we just have always been part of that community. And in my nursing background, I saw there was a position open and it was the progression I wanted to take.
Tell me about that background. How did you get into healthcare and why nursing?
So I decided to choose nursing when I was a junior in high school. I originally wanted to be a child psychologist and then just wasn't the best fit for me. And I've always wanted to be in the medical background. My grandpa, when I was young, had a stroke and we helped take care of him in our household, my mom and I. Mm-hmm. So it kind of geared my mind to going towards nursing and then became a CNA while I was in high school still, just to see if I would like it and fell in love with it. And here I am now.
Mm-hmm. Was Oak Creek where you went to high school?
Yep.
Yeah. And they had that certification in your junior year?
That's when you did it? I think I actually got it my senior year, but it's similar to what we have here at South Milwaukee where students can get their CNA license, which I strongly recommend all students to do just because it is a great experience and it's a good stepping stone to get anywhere in healthcare just because you're getting experience with patient care.
And what happened for parents who might be interested in their children doing that, what was your path after high school? What did you have to do for that?
So in high school, I took the CNA test and exam. It was a semester-long course, I believe. There were clinicals built into that. So we went to area nursing homes and we did practiced our skills and did all of those things. And then once I got my CNA license, I went to school immediately afterwards. Mm-hmm. But then I worked as a CNA in a nursing home up in Oshkosh where I went to college. And then I came back down for summer and came back for breaks in Oak Creek. So I ended up working at a local nursing home there for several years. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice because I could do that. And then as I progressed in my nursing education, I ended up working at a hospital in Oshkosh. It was Aurora Oshkosh and became a CNA there.
Mm. And then tell us about your nursing career. Where have you worked and what have you done?
Yeah. I've been a nurse for about 10 years now. I started at Aurora at St. Luke's. I was a medical surgical nurse as well as telemetry. I did that for about a year and a half.
I'm sorry. What does that mean?
So medical telemetry. So medical being you would get any kind of patient with any kind of medical diagnosis. So we would have surgical cases or post-op surgical cases. We would have cardiac patients. So having heart attacks, congestive heart failure. And then those patients would get to stay with us because we had telemetry, which is essentially a monitoring of their heart. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the only thing we dealt with. Medical being, we dealt with pretty much anything under the sun. So you'd have dialysis patients, you would have, you know, even overflow patients being ortho patients. It just kind of depended on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, what did you do?
I then spent my majority of my career at Children's in the Emergency Room. I was there for about 8 years. Learned all of my nursing skills and then fell in love with pediatrics, which if my mom listens to this, she's going to laugh. She was the one when I graduated nursing school saying, you should really do pediatrics. You'd be so good at it. And I was like, absolutely not. Am I going into pediatrics? Got a job in the emergency room, fell in love with it. So thank you, Mom. I appreciate you. And then after 8 years, kind of decided that I wanted to take a step back. I really enjoyed my experience there, but I needed to take a step back for my family, just because it was challenging and still wanted to work with kids. So when I saw this position open, it was perfect because it worked with my family life, but also allowed me to still work with the kids that I wanted to work with.
Yeah. Gotcha. I just imagine, I know my kind of heart breaks when my child is sick. I can't imagine working day in and day out with sick kids all the time.
Yeah, it got challenging. I mean, I like I said, I am so grateful for all that I learned and the doctors and nurses that I worked with there. I'm forever grateful and appreciative for them. It was my time to take a step back.
Yeah. So. Think back to Sarah Barrett, who graduated from Oak Creek with an idea of nursing. What would you tell her now about nursing that you didn't know then?
Ooh, that's such a great question. I would say don't ever think that you can't do something. So similar to what I said before about when my mom said you should work in pediatrics, and I was like, absolutely not, I'm not doing that. I would tell myself, don't ever turn down any opportunity. Take any background you can and try to just get your feet wet in every position, because you don't know what you're going to love. You don't know what you're going to fall in love with until you find your niche. And I would just say, keep on trying to get as much experiences as you can.
Mm. Switching a little bit to this job now, what is it? What do you do?
That is a big question. So as a district nurse, there are a couple things I do. So my position, I tend to take care of the elementary level kids, but I still do work with the middle school students and high school students. With being a district nurse, you know, it's not just sitting in a health room and passing meds, doing Band-Aids, you know, ice packs, the whole nine yards. We definitely do that. Myself and the middle school, high school nurse, Jessie, she also will cover in health rooms where we need to, but we're also reaching out to families and making health plans for patients or students with chronic medical needs, such as diabetes, asthma, allergic reactions, those kinds of things. So we're working with families to do that. We do work in like IEP meetings as well for kids with learning needs who also have medical needs that we need to address within their plans. We also help out with doing 504 plans, which are medical plans. Oh gosh, there's so much more. For my role, I am a supervisor as well. So I do manage all six schools from a supervisor aspect. So training the health aides that are in every single health room, making sure their competencies are up to date. We are always having meetings and doing those things. Trying to think of what else now that I'm on the spot.
Sure. Well, I can think of one thing. When there happens to be something spreading around schools, you're also a point of contact.
Yep.
And tell us what students should be doing when they're not. Maybe you could go into that one. It's a really bad description.
You're good. So on top of all of that, we also are monitoring trends within the community. So trying to keep an idea of pertussis being a big one that we've been seeing throughout the state of Wisconsin. So, you know, just keeping myself knowledgeable on what's going through our community, what's going through our state. If we are having pertussis cases or any other cases, making sure we're reaching families adequately, giving them the information they need. Typically for specific communicable diseases, pertussis is a little bit different. We just notify families right away. Mm-hmm. But for majority of communicable diseases within the classrooms, what we do is if we have three or more cases of a communicable disease, let's say lice, for instance, if we have three or more cases within a classroom at that point, then we would notify the classroom where that is impacted so that families can take necessary precautions. So we definitely do that. We also are monitoring respiratory trends. So right now, with viral season being what it is, we are constantly looking at what's going around. So particularly right now, we're seeing RSV, flu, COVID. There has been some, it's called mycoplasma pneumonia. It's walking pneumonia. We've been seeing some of that. And then on top of, you know, our gastrointestinal conditions, like norovirus being a big one, which people are seeing, obviously, in the news, pertussis. Mm-hmm. So we kind of keep an idea of what's going around that way, too. And we maintain that knowledge. We get updates from the state. So there's a head nursing consultant through DPI that we get a lot of updates from. So she will give us information of what is on trend right now. What are we seeing? I also have a lot of friends in the medical community, obviously working where I did. So they sometimes will keep me up to date what they're seeing in the emergency room so I can keep myself knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. On top of just, you know, doing my own research and doing that. On top of that, we also will respond to emergencies within the school. So some schools have students that have seizure disorders. So we will respond to those. Kids that have allergic reactions, another thing that we will respond to, making sure that we're training staff that need to be trained on all those emergency protocols for their students to make sure that they're staying safe. Yeah, we do a whole lot. We do CPR training with our students. We just went through CPR training in our eighth grade science classes. Thank you to Jim Dongrisha, who is a retired firefighter and sub that has come in and helped us do that. We also will do hands-only CPR for staff so that they have practice with it in the event that we would never ever need to use it.
Well, and so it's a little scary hearing that list of things going around right now. Generally, though, how are our schools? And you talked about how and when you notify, but, you know, that idea that those things exist in Wisconsin, they are happening. It's part of cold and flu season. Where are we at? Do you feel like it's there's a lot of it here? There's a little bit. It's average. Where are we?
I was talking to the other nurse about it. I feel like in general, we still are seeing a lot of illness, and it's not just our schools. I think it's pretty much everywhere. I can speak even for my own children's school that there's a lot of stuff going around right now. I think because we are still not fully recovered and our immune systems are not up to where they were pre-pandemic, we're still seeing a lot of viruses. So right now, and it's very typical for this time of the year to have those viruses, but I just think it seems like a little more so still because we're not quite where we need to be at immunity-wise. From a school perspective, we do follow protocols for students that are sick. So that is put out by Wisconsin DPI or the Department of Instruction. Mm-hmm. So we follow... If a student has a fever of 100.4 or higher, they would need to be sent home. Typically, the only way that those students are allowed to return is if they are fever-free without the use of medication for 24 hours. We will send students home if they have an episode of vomiting at school or three or more episodes of diarrhea. Similar to having a fever, they would need to be vomit-free or diarrhea-free for 24 hours. For our respiratory precautions, we... Again, if the student has respiratory symptoms and they have a fever, they have to stay home. And we ask parents, again, fever-free for 24 hours without the use of medication. And then the respiratory symptoms need to be improving. Mm-hmm. We do strongly encourage students to wear a mask. It's not necessarily required, but we would love for them to do it just to keep others safe. And then obviously good respiratory hygiene. So coughing into our elbows, not our hands. If we're blowing our nose or we do cough under our hands, no big deal. Just make sure we're washing our hands with soap and water. Just being safe in that sense. And then if we're in large groups and a student is sick or, you know, if they're on a family trip or something and they're sick, you know, similar to COVID, we just ask that, you know, we try to appropriately distance ourselves appropriately.
So that's a good segue about when students go home. But I know how do parents decide when a student should stay home or come to school? Because I know we encourage all our students to come to school every day. We are trying to improve on attendance, but this is one instance where parents should use their judgment.
Right. Yep. I would say for sure, fevers are a no. We would want to keep those kids at home because fevers typically mean that they're at their highest point of spreading. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we're not sending those students to school because we don't want to spread to other kids. We, of course, want them to be here, but we also recognize that when they're having fevers, they're sick enough where they need to be home, they need to rest, and they're not at their best if they're not feeling great. Similar to vomiting and diarrhea, there is a bigger risk of spreading it around, just given if we touch surfaces that a student doesn't wash their hands appropriately or, you know, those similar things. We ask them to stay home. Again, using your judgment is the big thing. And I always say to parents, you know, if you are uncertain or they've been sick for a prolonged period of time, that's where, you know, their pediatricians or primary care doctors are really important, just so that we can make sure, A, that these kids are getting seen and taken care of, and making sure that they're not spreading things around to their peers if there is something going on. So that's typically what I will tell parents. And the hardest part is respiratory stuff, because I think we're in a post-pandemic world where we're trying to figure out what does that look like, because, you know, most people aren't masking anymore, but, and a lot of times we used to just send kids to school when they had respiratory viruses. Mm-hmm. And COVID, that kind of flipped it all on its head and said, no, you're not coming in for any respiratory viruses. So when deciding for respiratory viruses, I would say if your student is on the path of getting better, if your student is able to appropriately manage, you know, any secretions, so, you know, they're blow their nose and make sure they're maintaining good respiratory etiquette of washing their hands after, if you feel that your student is able to do that, then I would say absolutely, let's give it a try and just make sure we're being careful as long as they're not having a fever. And like we talked about, parents can also always send their kids with a mask if they're coming back after respiratory virus. Nobody would ever be upset about that. We'd actually look at it like, hey, you're taking the necessary precautions to keep us all safe. Mm-hmm. So the respiratory part is really tricky, but I just say to parents, parents have a good judgment of their kids. They know their kids when they feel that they can do well in school versus not. And I would say if at all else fails, look at them and say, could they be at their best right now? Could they learn? Or should I be keeping them home so they can get more rest so that I can get them back the next day so they can learn effectively?
Sure. And as far as attendance and doctor's notes, what do you need to hear from a medical provider, you know, to get that doctor's note? Is that you? Do you get them?
So we work really closely with attendance too, because they're obviously the first line of who get the excuses, just because they are right in the front of the office. They are the ones that take all these notes. So attendance, if there is a specific condition that occurred or they were diagnosed with something specifically, they will typically reach out to us and say, hey, this person was diagnosed with this. You may want to follow up with the family. Sometimes we don't have to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we already know the protocol that is necessary for them. Other times we'll follow up with the family to make sure that they were educated on when the student can return. But we always ask, if possible, anytime a student goes to the doctor, that we get an excuse, just because we want to make sure they have excuse attendance. We don't ever want to be in a position where, you know, they go to the doctor a bunch and then that puts them into an unexcused portion, especially if they have a note.
Right. Yeah. So for folks who didn't listen to our episode titled Absent last year, where we talked about our absence thing, yeah, you get 10 days of unexcused absences, and then you start running in jeopardy of getting letters from school and stuff. But medical excuses are clear. Like, they don't count towards those 10 because of that emphasis on keeping everybody healthy and safe and having your student in school when they feel their best.
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
How about some other things that are nebulous? My son has had a sore throat once a week for almost the whole school year. And we take him in, they swab him for strep. It's not that. We send him back, but he's missed half a day of school. When should we worry about those things, like sore throat?
I would say if you're just noticing a change. So obviously if he has a sore throat and then all of a sudden he develops and has a fever, that would be a reason where I would say, hey, okay, we need to get this checked out. Specifically too, if you're noticing that your student or your child is having a sore throat for a prolonged time, then it might be the conversation with the family of, hey, when you take them to the doctor, have they mentioned getting them to see an ear, nose, and throat specialist? Because the hard part is a lot of families, if you don't have somebody in your house or your household or even in your family who's medical, you don't always know what questions to ask. So that's another thing that we do in our roles here at the school is because we know the health, you know, the health background and we know what questions to ask, we can sometimes help families to get the resources they need so that they can get their child seen. So, not along the lines of sore throat, but for instance, we had a student at one of the elementary schools where the teacher noticed that she wasn't seeing the smart board really well and was noticing that she would lean forward to see her Chromebook. And the teacher reached out and said, hey, I think that she may need a vision screening. We reached out to mom and recommended that she go to the eye doctor. And she said, well, I don't really know where to go. Could we just do a vision screen? So then I went over to elementary school and very much indeed that student very clearly needed to get seen by an eye doctor because I was concerned about her vision screening that we performed at school. So I reached out to mom. Mom said, where do I take her? And I gave her a list of places that she could go that are local to hopefully help her. I also told her, you know, you could reach out to your primary doctor, but your primary doctor is likely going to say, this is the route you go. So that's just one example of how we can help families get the resources they need. And sometimes, you know, primary care physicians are busy and they, yes, they remember who you are, but they don't always keep track of, I've seen you this many times with a sore throat, and it kind of goes to the wayside. So helping families know, like, hey, you can reach out to us and we can try to lead you in the right direction. And, you know, for the instance of your son, get into an ENT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And then the other, I guess the opposite of that question is, when do we send them? Like, you know, he's got a sniffle. I'm just using him as an example. He's got pretty good attendance. But, you know, like in general, like that year after COVID, yeah, we missed a lot because we were trying to follow the COVID protocols and it lightened up and whatever. But when is a sniffle just a sniffle, a cold just a cold, and you should go through power through it?
Mm-hmm. I will also use my son as an example. He's my frequent respiratory child and he always has a lot of things. So I kind of use him as my example here. So with him, we can always kind of just, again, being a parent, you can kind of tell when they're not their best and we just use our judgment there. But what I do with him, because he coughs year round, you know, he's frequently a kid that coughs and has an inhaler and all the things. I just kind of will see, in the sense of, is he doing his day to day? Is he able to run around and play with his sister? Is he able to complete his tasks and still focus on things at home? Or is he kind of lagging behind and just like really struggling, you know? And again, it's challenging. I get it. It's really hard, but it's just kind of learning how your kids look when they're sick. And I would ever say, like, I would say, if you ever have a question of, I don't know how this is going to go today, or they just really don't seem like they're up to snuff, I'm of the mindset that I would rather just keep my kid home. Now, granted, he can't be missing school all day long because that would not work either. But just kind of looking at, even if you don't know medically, look at their day to day. Are they able to play? Are they able to eat normally? Are they drinking normally? And they're still functioning through all those things. Then I would say, absolutely bring him to school. He's, you know, they're doing okay. Is he, you know, just lounging on the couch? Is he, you know, coughing a ton where he's using his belly muscles to breathe? Is he not wanting to eat because the cough is so bad and he just wants to drink? That to me would then say, okay, we need to stay home. So just kind of looking at what their day to day like is like, and if they're at their baseline.
Sure. And something that, you know, we're talking about cold and flu season, but it's also the middle of winter. When is a mental health day appropriate? Like, when, if we're feeling down, if they're not motivated, I actually live in Illinois and they put one in the schedule. Like, you're allowed one out of those 10 days. One of them can be a mental health day. Need no questions asked. The second one, they want you to talk to their therapist or the counselor or whatever. But, how about here? I'm sure you hear that a lot. I'm just not feeling well at all.
Yeah. And I feel like we hear it a lot more with our middle and our high school, just because the pressure is a little different, obviously, than elementary. So I would say, you know, if you need to have a day, sure, but you have to be very self-aware of what that looks like, because is it just, oh, I'm having a rough day, or have you been having several rough days? Because, you know, it's Wisconsin, as you said, it's winter, and we all, I think, suffer a little bit from having some winter blues. It's a normal thing. We don't see the sun a ton in Wisconsin during the winter. So I would say if you're feeling like you're getting to a point where you're sad a lot of the days, or you're just not having interest in activity like you normally would, like say, you know, you're a dancer and you just have no interest in doing it, but it's like your passion. At that point, I would say you need to definitely touch base with either if you have an established therapist, or a lot of the primary care offices do have mental health resources built into their clinics. Now, I get that mental health is very difficult to get into because there's a lot of need there, but just trying to take the appropriate steps to make sure that you're taken care of, because we really do worry and care about students' mental health. We understand that there's a lot of pressure that goes with being a student. I mean, it's not easy by any stretch. And I look at some of these kids and think I could never do what they're doing now. So just, I guess, recognizing and making sure that you're talking to your people, or talk whoever that is, whether it be your parents, your best friends, your dog, your fish, whatever it is, but trying to recognize if you are having a hard time, to reach out to the necessary people to get the help you need.
And then how often and who should parents talk to at the school about, you know, medical sickness, about their cold, about how often do you want parents communicating with you about how their kids feel? We have 2,800
students. Right. So every school has a health aide. So you can always reach out to the health aide at the school, because I'll be honest, the middle school, high school nurse and I were not always in the same building all the time. We rotate pretty regularly throughout the buildings. So if we're not there, I would always recommend you reach out to the health aide, or even if you'd got in touch with the front office staff, they're all very good about getting us information. And a lot of our health aides have a really good knowledge of all things medical. So they oftentimes can answer a lot of the questions, but if it's something that they feel they can't answer, they will always either shoot me an email or give me a call or whatever they need to do. And then I can then follow up with families. I never have any problem with families reaching out to me. I would rather you reach out than sit in limbo and be afraid to contact me. Like, I would rather you just reach out so I can help in any way that I can.
Well, Sarah Barrett, she's a district nurse for the School District of South Milwaukee. Thank you for coming on the SMY podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode. It's important to mention that while we have a district nurse, who we really appreciate, we also have school counselors, psychiatrists, and social workers that are here to assist students and families when it comes to mental health. We appreciate all of them and the work they do, and encourage you to reach out to them if your child is struggling. Another not-so-fun fact before we let you go, Nurse Barrett is right about hand washing being the best way to stay healthy. The Centers for Disease Control report that norovirus, which is making its rounds and making people particularly miserable this year, can't be killed by hand sanitizer. Let that sink in. Remember, happy birthday twice with lots of soap and hot water. Thank you to Sarah Barrett for her time today, and for you for being involved in your child's school and education. We'll see you next time.